Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Jay Waite. Jay is the Associate Director for Decennial Census in the U.S. Census Bureau, which is part of the Department of Commerce. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Berlin.
Welcome back, Jay. The census has been called the largest peacetime initiative of the U.S. government. Can you describe the logistics required to conduct the census?
Well, a little bit. The census is conducted mostly with rented logistics and facilities. Just to put that in a little bit of perspective, during a census, we have 12 regional census centers, 520 local census offices. Now, a local census office is about 16,000 square foot of rented space with communication facilities in it, 4 data capture centers, which are basically shopping centers that we've bought and gutted and put data capture equipment in them. We printed over 20 million paper maps in order to assist the enumerators in going out and doing the non-response follow-up part of the interview. We had 10 major IT systems and several secondary systems. About 15,000 personal computers were purchased just for the census. About 13,000 servers, and over 16,000 telephone lines. We hired 860,000 positions for temporary 6 to 8 week jobs. So we'd hire them, train them for 3 or 4 days, and send them out to do mostly non-response follow-up work. 860,000 people who we didn't know the week before we trained them and who knew at the beginning they had a 6 to 8 week job. Managing that staff was a bit of a challenge. We conducted the census in 49 separate languages, which meant we had to have different pieces of paper and different language skills on the part of our enumerators. We had 27,000 local questionnaire assistance centers, Mary's Barbershop, John's Barbershop, Mary's Beauty Parlor, the 7-Eleven, the service station where we put questionnaire. We put a little staff there. You could walk in if you needed to, and they would help you fill out the questionnaire, give you some answers about how to do the questionnaire. We answered 5.8 million telephone calls in about 9 days from questions that people were calling in about the. It came all in one spike as we mailed out all these forms. We captured data from 1.5 billion pieces of paper from March through August. And to put that in a bit of a perspective, a billion pieces of paper is 17 stacks of paper the size of the Sears Tower. And we had 1.5 billion pieces of paper that we processed from March through August of 2000 in these 4 big shopping centers. We printed over 400 million questionnaires. And within a year, we tabulated data for 9 million census blocks, 51,000 tracts, 39,000 governments. And our data capture centers that I talked about just briefly, they were basically large, very large, almost shopping center kind of places where questionnaires would come in by the truckload every day, several tractor trailer loads of questionnaires. They had to be opened, sorted, and captured with the optical scanning characters. We employed each one of about 2,000 people per data capture center. And as I've mentioned before, we processed about 1.5 billion pieces of paper during the summer of 2000.
So we're all drawing these mental pictures right now of huge stacks of paper and tractor trailers lined up for miles and miles. But most of us aren't thinking right now about 2010, but I'm sure you're thinking about that every day. What are your plans for 2010 census, and how will it differ from the 2000 census?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Tom. The 2000 census was probably the best census ever. As far as coverage was concerned, we believe that at the end of the day, based on a lot of detailed evaluation, we may have actually overcounted the population by less than 0.5% nationwide. It was very, very high quality census from a wide range of avenues, but it wasn't perfect. The census design is that we count everybody on census day, and approximately 1 house in 6 gets what we call a long form. That's where we get the detailed data for journey to work, for education, for income. That data is the only source of very small area data about your block or about the building you live in. And it's really valuable for government and local governments and businesses to plan to understand what does this community look like and what are their characteristics. That data now comes out only once every 10 years. That's not often enough. If your neighborhood looks exactly the same as it did 10 years ago, then once every 10 years is a great thing if you're a planner. But I used to say a lot of times in earlier discussions, in 2002, the most recent data that the average mayor in America had about the details of their community was collected in 1990. That's just not cutting it. So one thing we're talking about in the 2010 census, we're changing that paradigm. We're eliminating the long form from the regular census collection, and we're collecting data in what we call the American Community Survey, where every month we'll be talking to 250,000 households throughout the country. Rolling that data up over a five-year period will give us 15 million long-form sample cases, which is a sufficient size to produce small area data every year with a five-year rolling average. People will no longer have to worry about having 8, 9, and 10-year-old data to make those kinds of decisions. Another important thing we're doing is that we have a large database. Virtually every address in the United States is a part of our database for our mailing of our census. We have accompanying that an electronic map, basically street centerline map, called Tiger. Some of you may have seen or used Tiger line files, which is the basis for MapQuest and many of the other mapping, commercial mapping processes that you see and use all the time. That file is very useful and very good, and we use it to produce these 20 million maps as well as to provide mapping characteristics around our data. But that data is not in true GPS alignment. It's proportionally correct. It's relatively accurate to one another, but it was drawn in many cases by hand and digitized. So we have a process going on as part of the 2010 census to go through every county in the United States and align that Tiger with true GPS alignment. That's going to mean that we can then, the crown jewel, as it were, when we're doing the short form only census, this time when you don't fill out your form and we need to come and do non-response follow-up, instead of coming with a paper questionnaire, we'll be coming with a small handheld PDA with a GPS transponder on it that will allow the enumerator to find your house with your GPS coordinate, conduct the short form interview, transmit the results of that interview back to our headquarters, eliminate the data capture of all the non-response part, and basically take care of what I like to say we're replacing electrons for trees. We're trying to be responsive to figure out some way to save money. The American Community Survey is a wonderful survey, but it's expensive. We think it will cost somewhere on the order of $1.7 to $2 billion during the decade. Realigning the MAF Tiger is a wonderful thing, but it costs money. It's going to be on the order of $500 to $550 million during the decade. So we need to save the money in the collection of the short form. And you know, Billy Sutton was asked one time, why do you rob banks? And he says, that's where the money is. When I look to saving money, I look to the field. We spent, in 2000, the census cost $6.7 billion. About 70% of that money was spent in the field. So if you're going to save serious money, you have to look to the field. The field spends money on three things. People. Gobs and gobs of people. Space. And paper. During the 2000 census, we printed 400,000 questionnaires, and we printed listing sheets and addresses that they're supposed to go to in these 20 million maps. So you get this big volume of paper, then you have to rent space to put that paper in, and you have to hire people to move that paper around. So if you're going to attack the cost in the field, you have to attack paper. And we're attacking paper with those what we call mobile computing devices, small PDA, electronically transferring the map as well as the assignment of which particular house your assignment is, back and forth, eliminating the use of paper except for the initial mail out and mail back. That is the main thrust of our cost containment activities that we're approaching with the 2010 census. So we're already testing it. We're beginning the process of 2010 even as we speak. We're doing a test, our first test of these mobile computing devices in Queensborough, New York. And it's a fairly challenging place to take that process and find those addresses and do that work. So this next spring, we'll be having our first census test in Queens, New York, and in three counties in southern Georgia, beginning that process. So we're really excited about the upcoming census. We think it's going to be different in some important ways. We believe that in the future, census will look, act, walk, and talk a lot different. We want to continue our move away from paper and more toward technology and electronics.
How do you count people who just don't want to be counted? For example, they might have issues with the IRS, they don't like government intrusion, a host of reasons, but they just don't want to be counted.
That's one of our big challenges, of course, and we try to do it in a number of ways. We were very successful, we believe, in 2000 with a big outreach and partnership program. For example, people living in those communities that feel threatened in some sense by the government, perhaps they're here illegally or they're not too keen about the government knowing where they are. We tried to work with advocacy groups that knew them, getting people that they knew to go into their communities and work with them and help them to understand that we are not interested in whether they're citizens or not. We are not interested in whether the IRS is after them or not. We keep our data confidential. We have used partners throughout the government, throughout the country, in a lot of ways, individual advocacy groups or others to work with to try to encourage people to be counted. We weren't perfect on that, but we made big inroads, and that was a big reason why we were able to reduce our undercoverage as much as we did. And we expect to do that even a lot more. Our interviewers themselves, we hire indigenously, so you're talking about people that live in the community or coming to your door. We don't have Jay Waite driving through a neighborhood where he's never been before and in a U.S. government car saying, please come see me. But we try to reach down, and plus we spend a lot of time and a lot of money, really, on advertising to try and help people understand that a good count in your community is important to you. It will get you the resources that you need or the statistics that you need for schools, for roads, and for other things. We had our advertising campaign for separate languages and for separate markets and for people that we thought were difficult to count.
How do changes in technology affect the census? We'll ask Jay Waite of the Census Bureau for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.